What was the one we played Saturday night? Was that the two of us again, I think? It was Wrath of Glory.
Yeah. Live from the Mundangerous Multiplex in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 193 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about playing with multiple game masters in your group. But first, the rogue traders get caught in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign. And later, the DMPC picks up the slack in the Character Creation Forge.
Total Party Thrill is brought to you this week by Genuine Fantasy Press. They are giving away a free version of their new book, The Compendium of Forgotten Secrets, Awakening, at their website, genuinefantasypress.com.
It's a book for 5th edition D&D. All the player content is included in the free version. That is 125 pages of new stuff, including 34 new subclasses, 17 new warlock patrons and familiars, and over 175 new spells and invocations, along with 10 new races and dozens of campaign hooks.
In total, there are 190 pages in this book, The Compendium of Forgotten Secrets, Awakening.
That is nearly 200 pages, Shane.
That is, and that is nearly twice the content of D&D overall.
And considering there's a fair amount of D&D content that is not very good, it counts as even more, I guess.
Wow. I'll let you figure out how to fix that and edit.
Look, I'm looking at you, Dungeon Delver feet, okay?
So, The Compendium of Forgotten Secrets Awakening is designed to work with both classic and homebrew settings, and it gives you new ideas for your world and game.
There's beautiful full-color artwork, and it is available internationally on hardcover on Amazon, and probably soon at Whole Foods.
So check out The Compendium of Forgotten Secrets Awakening from Genuine Fantasy Press. Inspiring adventure.
So, not too long ago, Shane, we went to New Jersey together. On the train.
Yes, we did. We went all the way to New Jersey. We crossed a whole river. You crossed two rivers.
Two. Dos rivers, yes.
And we went to play games all weekend, right?
Yeah. So many games. Like, 8 different games. And, like, half of them weren't with you, which was also awesome.
It was great.
We were at Introcanso, which is a lovely portmanteau of convention and Intricasso.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So James Intricasso, one of the heads of our network, Don't Split the Podcast Network, as well as the host of Tabletop Babble, a published Wizards of the Coast D&D writer and editor for all the DMs Guild adepts. I think he's a DMs Guild adept himself and connoisseur, creator of the World Builder blog. I mean, the guy just does too much RPG work.
Yeah, any winner, James Intricasso, right? Is that, I think that's...
Any winner, James Intricasso,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, we were there to watch him win that any. Mm-hmm. He and a bunch of his friends get together every year and get together at someone's house and play a bunch of games all weekend. And we were invited this first time. It was our inaugural Intricasso.
Yeah, it was the first time they invited somebody who wasn't their friend.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And also the last time they will be doing
exactly.
That. Exactly. Yeah. All right, so let me see. When we got there, we played Masks.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know, I think we've been clear before that, like, Powered by the Apocalypse is not our favorite system, and yet, the game itself was a blast.
Yeah, I hate Masks, except for the prompts that it provides for your characters and the team building that go into the setup. I love that, and I love playing the characters I create as a result. I just don't ever want to use the system for anything, ever.
I played a 42-year-old college student from 1,000 years in the future where everything is run by Amazon Alexa and Jeff Bezos, who is a perpetual.
And I played an heiress who is the last surviving of the Kennedys. Who used her who used her family name and wealth as a superpower.
She was basically Richie Rich. It was great.
Well, she was doomed, so.
Right. And then we played Mothership, which is a game where you fail a lot
It's like an OSR horror game in which you fail at everything you attempt to do, which mm-hmm. turns out to not be scary and just frustrating. I would like to be able to engage with the threat if I'm meant to be afraid of it.
Yeah, although it was in space, so that was fun. I played Fall of Delta Green, run by Rudy Basso and written by Ken Height. That was a lot of fun. It's Gumshoe in Vietnam with Cthulhu.
Yeah, so how did that compare for you? How did that compare to Knights Black Agents?
Apart from like a difference in setting, it ran basically the same. So like I had a great time with it. For short games, I really like that resolution mechanic where it's like, hey, I want to succeed at this thing. Okay, I roll. And the GM's like, great, tell me how you do that. Because like you do it, you know? It doesn't get so granular where it's like I'm trying to climb and so I will roll and depending on my check is how many feet I go or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like I crit. So like I flicked a cigarette in a guy's eye and like clocked another guy with a flashlight and then like took out the second guy with the backhand of the mag light. Like, great. Boom, we're done. I think I was doing that while you were playing what? Burnbright?
I was playing a beta test of Burnbright.
How did that go?
I don't know how much I can actually talk about it, which sucks. But Burnbright is the new game, proprietary game coming out for Roll20 that is meant to be played through the Roll20 interface, like exclusively, right? It's all built for Roll20. And it has four lead designers, of whom James is one, as well as Jim McClure, Kat Kuhl, and Darcy Ross, who are all people who have made other cool RPG things. And it is it's like a far future sci-fi setting. It's called Burnbright because the galaxy is literally burning up from the edges, like kind of an inverse Big Bang. And so the galaxy is shrinking in a dangerously quick time frame, and everybody is scrambling to try and figure out what it is and how do you stop it, and also fight over their own territories. And it's like 10 different alien races and no humans, and it does some cool stuff with the interface of using Roll20 as a result. Some things that you normally wouldn't really bother tracking at a table are very easy to do because it's online.
All right, so maybe we'll hear a bit more about that at some indeterminate future date.
Yeah, when I'm positive that I'm allowed to talk about it.
I played some Harry Potter Bubble Gumshoe, which was great, even though I was a Hufflepuff, which was completely unfair.
You were miscellaneous.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I played 10 Candles, which is a game that I've been wanting to play for a long time. It's a horror game in which you die at the end. And it's all like paste based on 10 literal candles at the table. It was another game where we failed a just disproportionate amount, not because of bad mechanics, but because of bad dice luck. And it got almost like comically sad horror because we were so bad.
That's my favorite kind of horror.
Yeah.
I think also someone who was playing that set off the smoke alarm.
Yes, because you burn things when you use them. So we had to play in a slightly more risky version, being the second time it was run the weekend, one without a smoke detector. So then we also played for the first time at the table Wrath and Glory.
Yeah, how'd that go? I mean, I had a lot of D6s, and I like rolling lots of D6s.
I think the game we played was fun. I think I did a poor job of managing the system or grasping the nuance of the system. So I'm going to have to take another look at that before we really dive into it for Rogue Trader.
Yeah, I think we, yeah, before we like absolutely decide that's the system that we're going to be using for Rogue Trader once we switch away from Fantasy Flight.
Yeah. I will say that character creation was somewhat convoluted and required a spreadsheet. And there wasn't a good spreadsheet available, so I had to take a bad spreadsheet that was available on the internet and fix it for myself.
Hey, that's what I did with Fantasy Flight's Dark Heresy, so, you know, it hasn't changed.
Yeah, I know.
It didn't get worse.
Right. So there's that.
And we played, I think, the best game of Blades in the Dark that I have been in thus far, although it may have been because this was the first time we had a GM who actually knew the system and knew what they were doing.
Yeah, it's almost like if you read the book before you run it, you get better results.
Huh.
Also, if you have players who don't reject the premise immediately, you get better results.
We didn't reject it. We were just really bad at heists. We did not ask for a, what's it called? Oh, yeah, a map.
Yeah.
It was kind of a gimme at the end where the GM was like, I mean, most people I run the scenario for, like, look for a map, but, like, I don't know, do you want to do a flashback and, like, get a map? Because it might be useful.
We constantly run into this problem with Blades in the Dark where we spend none of our time, like, we get the setup, right? And then you're supposed to have the preparation round of activities, and then you just go straight into the heist, right? You don't do the planning. So you get, like, some information in your prep, but you don't plan anything. And then you use flashbacks and different things to kind of, like, plan post hoc. Well, invariably, we waste our, like, planning round actions trying to learn more about the setup, like the premise, or, like, manipulate some potential outcome if we succeed on this thing, and doing absolutely no work to advance the goal of actually succeeding on this heist.
Right. I do some research into lore. Yeah. I'm really interested in, like, the backstory of all this.
Yeah, I want to know. I'm looking up ways that I can screw over our employer in favor of our target. Like, that's not part of the heist.
Great. You're definitely getting shot later.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So shout out to everybody that we met. It was very cool hanging out, and loved playing a ton of different games with a bunch of different GMs. Highly recommended.
Speaking of cons, this is a good time to mention, because there's only a few days left, but the Akatacon 2019 Kickstarter is still live on Kickstarter. That is the convention hosted by the RPG Academy that I have attended for the past, like, 5 years. It is November 9th through 11th in Dayton, Ohio. As we're recording this, which is, I don't know, halfway through the campaign, it's practically funded. So I assume as you're listening to this, it is fully funded, and we are unlocking some cool stretch goals for attendees and different things like that. So if you would like to go, or you would like to support this con, the Kickstarter is a great way to do that.
All right. So speaking of Dayton, Ohio, which is basically a death world, Shane, where are we in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign?
So the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader game, played using Dark Heresy 2nd Edition rules by Fantasy Flight Games. And on the Death World Iblis Prime, in the frontier city of Meridian, the Rogue Traders have set out to establish a colony in the name of the Holy Throne of Terra and Prophet.
Prophet has been scarce, but warp phenomena have not been.
Yes. You are high above the planet on the orbital defense station known as the Watchtower, and you have set about undermining the Watchtower as your competing trade partners for a visiting Kroot fleet. And per usual, you have made a proper mess of the whole affair.
Yeah, because Silva Lionheart, our rogue trader, was trying to use her psychic powers, which she is typically very good at, but this time the dice did not cooperate. The power of the warp leaked into the room that we are in and exploded all the windows and also some poor guy's head.
Yes, the secretary of the Secretary of Trade Relations.
Not the undersecretary. Those are different things.
No, yeah, the secretary's secretary.
So that set off some alarms.
Yeah, windows shatter, people die, alarms ring out, guards scramble. And when they get there, they find the dazed and deafened rogue traders trying to play it cool.
Like, yeah, what happened? Original plan was get in and out very quietly and then erase all traces, both digital and psychic, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoops.
So, I mean, we don't really have any options here. We do submit to searches, although I think maybe the rogue trader does not, because she sort of kind of has some sort of diplomatic immunity-ish.
Yeah.
We very reluctantly hand over weapons and ammo. I think we are lucky that we are rogue traders, because otherwise I think it would have just been simply, like, thrown in the brig forever or summary execution.
Yeah, they treat you as something of equals.
Yeah, visiting nobles, I guess.
Right.
However, like, the most uncomfortable part is when they begin asking us questions about Lil Magnus.
So Lil Magnus is your strange, like, obsidian black carbon fiber cylinder that you carry with you, roughly stool size, that gives you like a pseudo telepathy, right? It's not telepathic, it's not psychic, but it basically lets you communicate.
Yeah, it's a Google Home.
Yeah. Which you sometimes bring with you when that's a handy ability to have. And you had intended for Lil Magnus to hack the secretary's cogitator. But now people are asking questions. What is this strange thing? Why are you so attached to it? Why won't you let us take it into evidence with the rest of your weapons?
Yeah, not cool. The rogue trader insists that the investigator returns her possession, Lil Magnus, insisting that it is the stool upon which she sits. And of course, as a rogue trader, she is entitled to sit upon anything that she wants, and she has determined that this is the only thing she sits upon.
So while the rest of you are undergoing questioning from the investigators and, you know, using Lil Magnus to keep your story straight, Lord Captain Silva Lionheart is raising a ruckus. So she refuses to submit to questioning and just complains the entire time about this indignity that the Watchtower is forcing her to sit in this inferior seating.
Right. The rest of the party is playing dumb and going, I don't know. The rogue trader's in charge. And the rogue trader is like, this chair is terrible. Look at this ridiculousness. Is that wicker?
So, frankly, tired of dealing with these ridiculous rogue traders, and Silva's rant starts to lose steam, the investigator ends up leveling with her. Look, he says, we know that you and your cronies have attempted to bomb the Secretary of Trade Relations.
And we'll find out where that goes. Next week. So this week, we're talking about having multiple GMs in your group. This is inspired by a question from listener Nate. He says, gents, I'd love to hear you talk about how you sort out your rotating GM setup. We trade around the GM chair, but have hit some problems with some GMs bringing down the group with lackluster performance. We want to be fair, but also need to figure out how to trade off without hurting feelings. I have a few thoughts, but wanted to hear about how you handle it before addressing it systematically as a group. Thanks. Also, it's nice that we're getting called gents, which I assume here is short for gentlemen and is completely inappropriate.
Yeah, so I think we have alluded to this, and we do have multiple GMs in our group, but I think it probably makes a little sense to start from how our group and play is set up, because I don't think we're necessarily typical in that regard. So we have 8 people in our group. And we play pretty much every Monday night. Like, that's our fixed night of the week, typically after work. So we usually get 3 to 4 hours of game each week. So the oldest members of the group have been playing together for like 10 years now.
Yeah, very nearly.
Uh-huh. You've been there for what, 8?
2011. Yeah, 8. 8 coming on 9. Yep.
Yeah, I'm like, I joined like 5 years ago during the Morning Glory campaign.
It seems so much longer.
And our newest member joined a couple years ago for Dynasty Unwarranted. So, like, we've been playing together for quite some time.
Yeah. We definitely don't usually have like 8 people at the table, though. We generally require between 4 and 5. So that's like 3 to 4 PCs for quorum. And if we don't get that, then we either reschedule for a different day that week or we cancel that week.
And then of the 8 players in our group, 5 of them have GM'd extensively, 4 of them have run long-term campaigns, like over 20 sessions, for this group.
And everyone in the group has GM'd for this group at least one time. I think probably at least like 3 or 4 times, actually.
Yeah. And we had, we had some people who first time GMing was for our group. So. Right.
All right, so our weekly games, we do rotate, but we don't like rotate out each week. What we do is we typically run a single campaign at a time in 4 to 6 month blocks. So when Morning Glory first started, for example, I would run it for about 6 months straight every single week. And then, we cover this in our burnout episode, like you get tired or it's just difficult to like keep that going all the time. You forever GMs absolutely know about this. So then we just swap out. We like hit the end of an arc, and then someone else comes in and like runs a different arc of a completely different game.
Yeah, it doesn't always work out that way. It's not like we've got it planned like, cool, you're going to run until April 15th, and then on April 22nd, we'll run, like this person will run, right? And we know that for months in advance. Like a lot of times what happens is like either the arc ends and it feels like a natural stopping point, or the GM is starting to get burned out, or has something going on at work or at home or whatever that's like making it difficult to continue GMing for a while, or just somebody else is like, look, I've been waiting, I really want to run this thing, like can we wrap this up? So like it's not quite as fixed. We don't know what we're playing 6 months from now.
Right, but you know, someone will be like, hey, how much longer do you think this arc will be? Like 3 weeks, 10 weeks? You give people an idea, and then everyone can sort of like in their heads have an idea or start negotiating with the group about like what it is that we want to do afterward.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we've got a few games running, so it's typically one of those, and whoever's ready to go next, right, if it's going to be Dark Sun or Birthright or Rogue Trader or Eberron or whatever, right, like we'll kind of sort out what that's going to be, and if we can't kind of come to a consensus of who's ready and who's got the most interest, then we usually just put it to a vote.
Yeah, but almost always it's like other people being like, oh no, we like, you'll be like, oh, I can't go back to Rogue Trader yet, like we're not ready yet, or like I'm super busy, like do something else first, and like right. Someone will be like, yeah I can step up, like I'll do Dark Sun for 4 months or whatever.
Right. Yep. That's our standard, and then each week, you know, there's always some variability, right? Because you can't run that campaign, obviously, unless you have that GM present. So if we have a week where the GM can't make it, we typically don't cancel. We'll just switch games for that week. So we'll interrupt our long-running campaign with something else.
Yeah, so like right now I am running every week our second Eberron campaign that sort of takes place in the same timeline as Morning Glory. But I know that in a couple of weeks, I have to miss a Monday. So like, I've already sort of thrown that out there. Like, hey, someone prep a one shot or something like that. Cause like, I won't be around.
Yeah.
And you know, this gives us a chance to like stretch our legs with different games. You know, like you could just do a quick one shot with old characters, or, you know, do completely new one shot with a whole new system.
Yeah, a system has almost no consideration on what's going next, except that if nobody likes the system, we find a new system to run the game in.
I think also it is important to note that we have few games that usually run in the same system. Like Eberron and Dark Sun are both 5th edition, but you know, we've played multiple Fantasy Flights, or Rogue Trader is like not even D20 based at all.
So this kind of gives us this sort of, you know, occasional like off week kind of gives us a chance to try new systems, or, you know, if somebody has just bought a game or kickstarted a game, or more likely a Kickstarter finally like sent out its product, you know, stuff like that. That's a chance for us to use like these kind of weeks to not derail the campaign that we're running in, but still get some new stuff to the table.
Yeah. And it's good to be able to like sort of completely switch gears so that you don't get things confused. Like you don't usually fill in with another 5e game, we do something that we don't play a lot of, like Eclipse Phase or Blades in the Dark or Dungeon World.
Yeah, and actually we have some like sort of secondary like off campaigns that we default to sometimes. Like we ran Dungeon World kind of alongside Morning Glory, and every time that you couldn't run, we would just pick up Dungeon World because that was helpfully, you know, low prep. Eclipse Phase was another campaign that sort of existed on the fringes or in between other campaigns.
And Dark Heresy actually started off as an in-between game that eventually got spun out into a full campaign.
Yeah, like it was, oh, Dark Heresy, this new system, I bought it at Gen Con, I would like to run it now. It's like, cool, actually this is great, 40k role-playing is dumb and fun, we should make a campaign out of this, Jim, go do it.
And then a couple times a year we'll do like long session on like a Friday or on a like a holiday when everyone has off, or like a long weekend. These will either be like an extended session of the campaign that we're usually running, which is like either a long boss fight or a long dungeon crawl, or like the big like ending game. Like I think for the end of Morning Glory, I was like, all right, we're gonna pick a day when we can all make it, and like no one has to work in the morning because we're just going to go until we're done, and I have no idea how long it's going to take.
Yeah, it was like a Saturday night. It was like on a long weekend. It's like, we game as long as we have to.
Yeah, I am not making this easy. I'm not pulling any punches, and you guys are definitely going to complain and try to bargain your way out of this. Fine, right. Spend as long as you want with that.
But bring your own whiskey.
You know, and then every once in a while we'll do like a special one shot, or you know, someone will have an idea for like a game that doesn't affect canon, where it's like, hey, just bring whatever character, or like here's an Elseworlds or like alternate universe game that I want to try.
Yep. And then of course, as we've talked about on the show a few times, we also do Thrillicon, which is not unlike Interconso, where you know, our group will commit to a Friday through, like a Friday evening after work through Sunday morning. We rent a house somewhere outside of New York, and we just play games all weekend. And we just kind of schedule those things so that we get through like every game that we want to run all in the same weekend. So it's typically like five or six games. We'll play, you know, one shots, new systems, revisit multiple campaigns as kind of a one-time thing.
All right, so that's the place that we're coming from, although that's certainly not typical. But in terms of addressing problems about having multiple GMs in your group, there are a couple things to keep in mind. First one is that the self-awareness of potential problems that can arise, or like knowing that this is a logistical issue, can be very helpful.
Yeah, I think because we have so many GMs in our group, and we're rather open about that, like, our group kind of has consensus about what everybody likes or dislikes or does well in what kind of games or what kind of settings, and like has a good feel for like who would be good at running this campaign, or who would be like really good at this system, or whatever. Like, and then the GMs likewise also understand like, oh yeah, I'm good at running these like low prep story games, or like I'm really good at you know, plotting, you know, very complicated political intrigue or whatever, right? So people kind of stick to what they're good at for the most part when they're playing.
Yeah, like I don't typically run short one shots or even like short little arcs. I know that like I get sort of the most fulfillment out of running like long in-depth campaigns. So like I will step back for a long time while I'm not doing that before I come in and like, you know, do it for a long time, 6 months or like a year and a half.
Yeah. And as a result, right, because everybody is kind of self-aware about that stuff, like we can be pretty direct in our feedback. Like if everybody like floats a game, or somebody floats a game out there and like doesn't have a whole lot of interest, like people are just like, nah, I'm not really into that. Or like, I don't know that you're going to run that so well. Or like, I'm, you know, like, are you sure you're going to commit to that amount of prep?
Or maybe like, are you sure that you want to run that? Do you remember what happened last time?
Right. which I know is not true of every group, right? Like not everybody has GMs that have enough confidence and like understanding of their own preferences and tendencies.
Yeah, but I think it usually gets framed in like a helpful way, right? Like, hey, that requires a lot of prep. You know, or like I have run that system before and it requires like a lot of prep. So, you know, if you're going to do this, just make sure that you start planning it a few weeks ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know, we also pretty much debrief about every system and every game that we play. Not necessarily every session, right? But every game.
Right.
Like a discussion is started by somebody about what works and what doesn't work. And often it is the person who ran the game. Like, I think almost everybody steps up afterward and is like, hey, so how was that for everybody? Like, did you enjoy that system? I felt a little uncomfortable about like this section in the narrative where I wasn't really sure what to do. How did you guys feel about that?
Yeah. And I think like if your group doesn't do that, right, the best place to start that like pattern and that behavior is to start with your own game, right? So like stop everybody and ask pointed questions like, how did you feel about this thing that I did? Or like, I had fun with this. What did you guys think about it? Or like, I really hated this part of it and I was struggling through it. What did you guys feel? Like, did that come across, right? So you ask for the pointed and frankly, sometimes difficult feedback for yourself so that when you're trying to like give the hard advice to other people around the table, you've already kind of taken your licks.
Yeah. And, you know, don't do this in the middle of the session, right? Like if you have time at the end of the session, that's great. Like while everyone's packing up their dice, it's a good time to bring it up. We are also sort of in the position where people will often like take a, like share a car home or like take the train home together. It's a little more difficult if like in the suburbs and everyone's driving themselves home. You don't really have that sort of like debrief time together on public transit.
Yeah.
But like that can definitely happen in like Discord, or you know, we'll do that via email as well.
Yep. So the goal here is of course to make that routine, right? So that everybody in the group is comfortable kind of giving their feedback and receiving feedback, and you know, like you said, if that's every session or just every campaign or every month, something like that. And I think in terms of giving that feedback, you also want to make sure that you don't sort of default to deflecting and putting blame on a system or a setting or something rather than the GM, right? Because the two things are very linked. Like a setting and a system and a GM need to work together for the play experience to be rewarding.
Right. Like you need to know your system and you need to know the quirks of it and avoid the potholes that every system has and lean into its strengths. You know, it's really difficult for a GM to get better if they don't know what it is that they need to fix. So actually, this is one of those instances where, you know, you want to be kind about it, but you don't necessarily want to like couch things. Like if someone is genuinely asking for critique, you don't need to like lean in with criticism, but you should give them useful feedback. Don't hold back because they're just going to think they like it went really well. They're going to do the same thing over and over again. And then like everyone's just going to have a bad game again.
Yeah, I mean, like I had a little bit of this actually when we were trying to settle into a pirate game, right? Like I had said I wanted to run a pirate game. I had prepped a pirate game. I had tried to work like a 5e into pirates. I didn't like how that turned out. I tried feng shui. We didn't like how that turned out. Like it was all kind of a combination of systems and settings, right? Like coming system and GM like coming together and like either me not running things well or the system's not working, but like nobody pulled any punches that like feng shui was not going to be the next game that I ran. Right? Like
yeah, it was helpful that you sort of like opened up with like, guys, I really did not like that session. I had no fun with that. Did anyone else enjoy that? And we were like, well, no.
The story was interesting.
Right, exactly. Like, I liked making my character's backstory. Huh? Right.
I feel like we had a good start, but then we played the game.
And like, you know, that that trial and error eventually led to Rogue Trader, which we all enjoy.
Right.
Even though actually we have a lot of problems with the system.
Yeah. And the GM.
I mean, that goes without saying. So Nate here has a specific problem, right? He says some GMs are bringing down the group with lackluster performance, and he needs to figure out how to trade off the role of GM without hurting people's feelings.
So I think the first question that comes to mind when I hear that problem, right, is does everybody actually agree that there are one or two GMs who aren't cutting it, right? Like, is there a group consensus that, like, certain GMs like aren't really enjoyed, because you're going to run into a huge problem if there's not, right? So like if everybody is in agree, you know, seven people agree that one person is not very good, well, that's a different conversation than two people don't like this GM and three people don't like this GM and those two GMs really don't like this third GM. And like in that case, you probably need to have more of a roundtable discussion and figure out exactly like what is it that you guys enjoy about certain GMs and what is it that you struggle with about other GMs and what it's like, what is your ideal kind of for your group and your table? What is your ideal kind of session and game and structure and format?
Right. That becomes more of an issue of like, are you a great group together or should you maybe consider like dividing up into different kinds of play styles, right?
Right.
Like, we've definitely played games at cons with people who, like, we love them as a person. Like, we love hanging out with them. But, like, our play styles are so different that, like, it's fine at a con, but I would not want to be in a weekly gaming group with that person because, like, one of us is just not going to be having fun.
Right, exactly.
If it does turn out that it really is just one or two people who are the problem here, then, yeah, you're going to need to sort of deal with this head on. But the key here, of course, is going to be having empathy when you're having this conversation.
Yeah, you need to come from a place of like everyone here is trying to have fun, right? Including you. And we want you to have fun as part of this. But like we need to like talk about how we do that.
Yeah, like running a game that is bad and that people didn't have fun at is the worst feeling I have ever had in this hobby.
It's like it's the reason that people don't GM, right? Like it's the reason that you have forever GMs and nobody else steps up is the fear of like, well, I'll do it and I'll put part of me into my game and I'll be rejected for it, right? People won't enjoy it or they won't like my game or they'll think I'm a worse person because I failed or whatever, right? Like people build up all of this like story around themselves about how terrible it would be to just GM.
Yeah, when really, you're a terrible person because of your political views, not because of how you run a game.
Right. Why did you support Slobodan Milosevic in that election? Unforgivable.
I thought the choice was clear. So, I mean, one, like, we've talked about this before, like, if you ran a bad game or people are telling you that, like, they didn't really enjoy that particular session, all right, like, everyone has run bad games and everyone starts off as a bad GM. Like, you just do. Like, I have been a terrible GM, and I've told the story before about, like, one of the first games I ever ran was so awful that I was gently asked to, like, just end it and, like, you know, just tell them how it ends so we can move on to literally anything else. And I appreciated that. I didn't want to do six more weeks of that.
I mean, so how did that conversation go for you? Because that's a tough conversation to have, right? Like, so you were taken aside by somebody.
No, it was like at the table, and they were like, "Hey, dude," like, we were packing up, like, after one, and they were like, "Hey, dude, so we were thinking maybe you could just tell us how this ends," and then and they pointed to, like, another guy and was like, and, like, he was thinking maybe he'll run. Like, start running a different campaign. And I was like, oh, all right. I mean, that kind of solves that. All right. I mean, like, I felt bad, right?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a good feeling. But at the same time, I've been playing with these guys for, like, 2 years. So, you know, we had, like, a good rapport. Like, you know, I knew that they weren't, you know, trying to be crappy about it at all. And it was a bit of a relief, actually, for me to be like, oh, this wasn't working. Okay. Like, I got the sense that it wasn't working, but, like, now I have proof and now I can do it differently.
Right, right.
And, like, start over without having to, like, salvage a terrible game.
So, is there a way that they could have shared that with you that would have, like, felt less personally bad?
I think the criticism is never going to be easy, right? But, I mean, I guess someone could have messaged me directly and let me know ahead of time. Like, yeah, someone taking me aside, I think. I think in a lot of groups, you have, like, the person who brought you in, or, like, the person that you're, like, actual real-life friends,
like,
with.
The sponsor.
Yeah, exactly. That is probably the person who, like, should do the approach. It helped that, like, everyone was good-natured about it. Like, nobody thought I was a bad GM. They just weren't into this particular game that I was running. And then, like, they were fine when I wanted to run another game later and try it differently.
Yeah. So that's... That's interesting, because I think that's actually the most important thing is, like, when you deliver the hard feedback and when you try to do that, like, with empathy, you have to put your money where your mouth is on the sort of the point of view where, like, I want you to be better. Like, I, you know, like, I'm saying this because I believe it, but I also think, like, this is the end of this conversation, right? Like, this is, like, I would like for you to become better at this. Like, that means you have to give the GM a chance, right? Like, you can't say, like, hey, like, sorry, but your campaigns suck and we're never going to play with you again. Like, you're a player now, right? Like, that's not really a fair thing to do to somebody, at least not somebody that you would want to be your friend and continue being a part of your group, right? So I think it's important, like, if you're going to offer constructive criticism to somebody, you have to also offer them a chance to apply it and learn and, you know, like, show that they are also growing in the process, right? So I think you have to set aside time to continue to let GMs try.
Yeah, and then just continue that conversation about feedback. And, you know, like... There are always times when you want someone else to step up. When you've been running for a long time, it's great to take a break. Or, like, even players are like, all right, like, we've been doing the same campaign for, like, a year. Let's step up and do a one-shot. Those are great opportunities. And, like, it's helpful for everyone else in the group to be like, hey, person that, like, all of us know but will not say out loud ran not a great game last time, will you run a one-shot? I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, like, hey, in 6 weeks, like, could you run a one shot for us? Like, this person, like, our regular, you know, the regular GM could use a break for a week.
Yeah, and he can even fall on that GM to be like, hey, actually, in 3 weeks, I'm going to be out. You there? Like, do you want to run? You have a one shot you want to run? That'd be cool.
Or if it's something longer term, right? Like, whatever it is, like, just put a time box around it so that it's clear. Like, we are giving you this much time. Right, we will be completely supportive of you and, like, do as much for your game as we can and try our best to enjoy it and, like, be as constructive and, like, try to have as much fun as possible during this time. And then, good or bad, we will move on, right? And if it's great, we'll get you back on the schedule as soon as possible. And if it's not so great, like, we'll continue to work with you.
I think it's also important to note, like, this doesn't happen that much in groups that I've been in, you know, in the past like 15 years, but I think it happened maybe more in high school, was that you need to have people who are dedicated to the game itself and not necessarily to games run by specific people. Like, you come to the group because we are an RPG group and we play RPGs. You don't want to have people who, like, don't prioritize the game when a particular person is running. Like, that's just, like, it's not being a good team player. It shows, like, a weird amount of favoritism. And those people need to be called out. Like, hey, you really need to prioritize every game because, like, we all play all these games.
Right. So we have, in our experience, or in our group, we have had some sort of, like, special event games too, that were helpful when we had players who hadn't GM'd before and wanted to start, right? Or wanted to try it, or wanted to kind of dip a toe in the water. You know, like, we've had, like, we set aside one night for a one shot for one GM. We set aside, like, 6 weeks for a campaign. For another GM, that's where we learned we didn't like Mutants and Masterminds, but we did enjoy her GMing. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, but it was all within, like, kind of the idea of, like, cool, like, we know that you're new at this. We don't want you to overcommit or whatever, but, like, we want to give you as much runway as you need, right? And feel comfortable with. And so that's where we landed.
Yeah. And I think since then we've been like, all right, so when's the next game you're doing?
Or in Susie's case, and I'm calling out Susie, never again, because every time she does this, we die a little bit inside as a group.
Only because it's too real.
You missed her last one shot, in which we were, like, playing as real people. We're playing In Name Only, which is a game where it's like a fantasy game, but your name, like, the letters of your name determine your powers. So, like, each letter gives you a different, like, ability. And then the length of your name determines how good you are at any of your abilities. So a shorter name has fewer but better. And we were trying to fight a dystopian fantasy Trump by breaking into the wall he built around the White House and defeat his family and cronies.
That is one problem with being someone who, like, runs games most of the time, is that, like, those cool one shots happen on the weeks that you miss, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it is a little annoying to, like, you know, run a game all the time and then, hey, Susie comes in and plays an awesome game that people won't stop talking about for, like, the next 6 months, and you're like, great. So yeah. I missed that one, and it was awesome. Cool. Glad you guys had lots of fun with that, huh?
Well, I think Susie has it figured out, which is that if you only ever run your game, like, once in a blue moon, then people will be talking about it for the next year.
Oh, totally. Like, step in, drop the mic, and then leave, you know?
Right.
No, I'm good. I'm a player again. It's fine.
I'll ruin your entire friendship.
I think one thing that we haven't mentioned that varies from playgroup to playgroup is also we are very sort of meta at the table in general. Like, when we are running games, because so many of us are GMs, you can see the decisions that whoever is running the current session is making, and we can actually reference them, you know? So, like, someone will be like, okay, wait, we're getting off track. Like, let's just pick up the plot hook and, like, go to Balak, you know, because obviously that Angelo wants us to go to Balak because he's, like, laid down three of these, right?
Yeah.
We can have that meta talk, and that is helpful for other people who have less GMing experience to be like, oh, okay, I see, that's what it is, or that's what Angelo was doing. You sort of have this this primer for GMing because everyone is talking about it out loud.
Yep. Yeah, or the flip side is, stop throwing more plot hooks at us. I would like for once to just complete our main objective in a timely manner.
Right, yeah. Or, look, it doesn't matter if we go left or right, because, like, it's going to be the same room. So, whatever. Let's just go.
That one's a little less sporting.
Yeah. And it's usually not true, right? It's just, it's a joke, and then it becomes obvious that that is sometimes a technique people use.
Yeah, and we did this... actually, so when Steph ran for the first time her campaign, like, she and I, like, emailed a lot in between sessions, right, to talk about, like, what she was preparing, or, like, and she had like prep questions, right? Like, how do I make sure that this happens or whatever? And a lot of the time I was just like, just don't, like, You know, like, it'll work itself out. Like, we'll get there eventually somehow. Just let us figure out how we get to where we need to go.
Yeah, you know, like, that's our problem.
Yeah. So, like, a lot of that, like, it was just, I think it was helpful for her to toot my own horn, right? Like, I think it was helpful for her to just be able to bounce ideas of, like, you know, I only have a few hours a week to put into this. Like, where should I focus my time, right? Given this system and setting and kind of campaign that we're on.
Yeah, I think one thing that does happen sometimes is you get the GMs in the group, if you don't have a ton of them, start having conversations about running games, you know, and they get meta about it. Make sure that that is happening sometimes out in the open so that everyone can get involved in it and that everyone can, you know, not only give input, but can also learn from those conversations.
Yeah. So one thing that we haven't talked about and wasn't really part of this question, but kind of bears mentioning when you talk about multiple GMs is the idea of having multiple GMs in the same game, which is sometimes the village bicycle, right? Like each week, a different person gets on the bicycle and rides it.
That's not how we usually play because I think people feel a lot of ownership over the particular story that they're running, which, you know, is cool. But if this is a situation that you're in, then each GM who is going to be running part of this game needs to work out together their guidelines for, you know, the logistics of how they want to do it, what they're comfortable with, how much each person can change.
Yeah, like what is the scope of any given session? You know, like how much can you alter canon and those types of things?
Yeah, like is this a campfire story where like as it goes around, each person has like full control over it? Or is there one person who's running it and one person steps in on occasion, like when they want to or when the original person can't make it?
Right. And then the other kind of thing that I would point out with having multiple GMs in the same game, I think it's critical that you make sure that everybody who's GMing are fully invested in their characters. Because if you've got, say, three GMs, that means that two out of every three sessions, you will be playing a character, not playing the GM. So, like, you need to make sure that everybody who is signed up to GM is also actually signed up to play and that they're, you know, invested in that.
Right, and not just not showing up when they're not running.
Right.
And then the flip side of that, you don't want someone who's so overly invested in their own character that, like, when they're the GM, they're basically handing themselves loot. Or yeah. You have two GMs who are handing each other loot.
Right. I guess I always forget about those things we used to do in high school.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all of those just boil down to, like, these are people problems and not, like, game or like, technique problems.
Right, right. So, to wrap this up, I mean, I think, like, I don't know that we have the most scalable model for how to structure your group, given that we have basically eight GMs in our group, and we just find times to pass the baton. But you know, I think this is a kind of a common thing, right? Is if you have one GM, there's maybe somebody who wants to try it, or if you have a couple, there's a third person or something like that, or a new person comes in. So, you know, it's good to, like, I think just have more conversations about how games are run with the people who are playing them so that you can have an open forum to discuss this and grow.
Yeah, and if you are in a game where there's only one GM, like, consider initiating other ones because it's going to make everybody's life easier. It's going to grow the hobby, and it honestly makes things a lot more fun. It gets lonely if you're the only person who ever runs a game.
Yeah, my recommendation is one host, multiple GMs. All right, do you hear that, Ishan?
That is the mewling of baby GMs. We are slowly breeding them in this vat to be the perfect GM.
Well, I can't wait to find out what they grow up to be. So let's move on to the Character Creation Forge. And before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrill.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
Total Party Thrill is brought to you this week by our friends at Kobold Press. Would you like to learn the secrets of elven magic?
Oh yeah.
Would you like to blast your enemies with battle magic?
All the time.
Would you like to build cunning mechanical servants with clockwork magic?
Not so much, but I bet some people want to.
Well, then you should check out the Deep Magic series from Kobold Press that has all of this and more for 5th edition.
You mean it has time magic?
Yep.
And rune magic?
Yep.
And illumination?
It does.
Wow. There's nearly 20 PDFs with new ones coming out all the time.
In this series, you will find new magic schools, new sorceress origins, you'll find warlock patrons, feats, spells, magic items, and more.
You know, at Interconso, I found a new magic school, Invernay, in Salem, Massachusetts, which is the American Hogwarts. Although, really, we call Hogwarts the British Invernay, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And you can pick up the Deep Magic series for 5th edition at www.koboldpress.com.
So, this week in the Character Creation Forge, we are building the DMPC.
For those of you who don't know, that is short for Dungeon Master PC. That is usually a character in the game who's run by the GM. This is usually a big no-no.
Yeah, it's usually a character that's supposed to be a full member of the party, but happens to be controlled by the person who's running the adventure, the DM.
Yeah, it's a technique often used by new GMs or selfish GMs so that they can still play in the game, but usually they just end up being the Mary Sue.
Yeah, you can spot the conflict of interest from here.
Yeah. However, this DMPC is meant to make the game easier for everybody, the players and the GM. This is what a character who can fill in if, like, you need to step up and be the GM, but now you're leaving a hole in the party behind you.
This is more of kind of like a number one hireling, you know, like useful to have around the party, but never gonna steal the spotlight from anybody who's actually a main character.
Okay, so easy enough that like anybody could actually run them, depending on like who's here today.
Mm-hmm.
And helpful no matter the party makeup. So we're looking at lots of skills with relatively low modifiers, so you're not the main person, but you can assist anybody you want and give them advantage.
Then we'll also have ritual spells that help the DM give more information to the players that usually they didn't ask for and definitely didn't invest resources in preparing this morning.
And, you know, in a pinch, can keep other party members alive. Always helpful and appreciated.
And then, of course, we don't want our DMPC to be sucking up party resources while offering only marginal benefit. So we've got a little bit of defense and sustain built in there as well.
Nice. All right. So what's the build?
It is Bard 1, Champion Fighter 19.
I love simple builds like this.
Well, it's meant to be a simple man. So we will start with Variant Human. That gives us a +1 to +2 stats. It gives us a language, a skill, and a feat. We will, of course, take the skilled feat so that we'll have 3 extra skills.
Wow, that's a first.
Uh-huh. I'm going to spend my skills to get more skills. Spend my wishes to get more wishes. And then from a stat perspective, I think this might be the first time we've actually talked about what array to use. But in this case, we're going to use one of the worst ones. So we'll take the 14, 13, 13, 12, 12, 10 stat. So it's all like, you know, +2, or it's basically all +1s except for the 10 and the 14.
And with your +1s, you'll stick those in your 13s. So you net 3 14s, 2 12s, and a 10.
So the goal for this build will be to maximize your con and maximize your strength. And then you'll leave your charisma at 14. That's necessary for Bard.
Stick all your ASIs into con and strength. So from Bard 1, you get 4 spells known, one of which should be Healing Word, because you can use that as a bonus action twice per day. You can always get someone up who is down in a pinch. And then you'll want to pick Ritual Spells, Comprehend Languages, Detect Magic, and Identify, the spells that every party needs but nobody actually wants to waste resources on.
Exactly. Starting at Bard also gets you 3 more skills, and it gives you 1 Bardic Inspiration die per day, which is a D6. So the most important seeming roll of the day, you hand that out for them. It's a little bit of DM fiat right there.
Pretty juicy. From Champion Fighter, I don't think we've ever gone this deep into Champion.
I don't think anybody has.
I don't think we've ever gone this deep into Fighter.
That's probably also true, yeah.
So you get a whopping 7 ASIs.
Every ASI available.
you'll need 6 of them to max out strength and con. The other one you can stick, I don't know, wherever, or I don't know, maybe take a feat, but take a passive feat, right?
Yeah. Take something that's you know, straightforward, isn't going to require more abilities to track.
And no remembering.
Right. So you'll get the usual fighter goodies. That's Action Surge, Second Wind, and Indomitable. Those are basically the only trackable things that you have as a character from fighter. So that makes it pretty light.
And then, for the most part, your abilities are simple and static. You get that expanded crit range. It doesn't change. You get extra fighting styles and half proficiency on strength, dex, and con checks that you're not already proficient with.
So for your fighting styles, you'll take defensive style, which is a plus one AC. That's fixed, as well as dueling, which is plus two damage with a weapon in one hand.
Also fixed right on your sheet. And then at level 18, you get survivor. You'll regain 10 HP per turn when you are below half your hit points. So basically, you automatically heal up to half your hit points, which actually is less bookkeeping because you don't need to roll hit dice if you're the GM or you're some other player playing this character. You're just, okay, the battle's over. Great, I heal back up to half hit points.
Yeah, and then also you're not sucking healing spells out of the rest of the party to keep the DMPC alive. You're just kind of handling it yourself.
That's the worst when, like, they become baggage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the net result here is that you've got high AC because you'll use a shield, you'll have defense style, you'll wear heavy armor, you'll have high hit points because we're maximizing our con. You have those indomitable saves, which helps you pass you've got lousy dominate. Rolling. Yeah. and then you've got some self-healing with your second wind and your regeneration, so you're less of a burden on the party. You're hard to hit, you're very sturdy, and then you heal yourself even if you do get down.
Out of combat, you have 9 skill proficiencies, 4 from a human and your feet, 3 from bard, and 2 from your background, which means that you can take things that no one else in the party has, or you can double up to make sure that you're giving them advantage when they're rolling, because that's more fun for them.
Yeah, I like the idea of focusing on skills that are easy to help others with, and then they're also very frustrating for you as the DM when people fail it, right? So things like survival or perception, investigation, stealth, animal handling, these are all skills that either like aren't commonly taken or they're commonly failed, and then they present an impediment to you as the DM. Like, it's the worst when they want to sneak in and like they have this cool plan for their heist and they blow the first stealth check and you're like, cool, you tripped the alarm, now we're going in hot, glad we spent an hour prepping this.
Right. It's also handy if you are the GM who's running this character. They have investigation, so it makes sense that you would roll it, and they can roll whatever you need them to roll.
Yeah.
Oh, they found these clues. Here you go. They're not going to read them, though. You're going to need to read them.
And then the other thing that is nice to have a helper are religion and nature specifically, because druids and clerics don't typically get high intelligence to go along with often taking those as proficiencies. So you can always offer them advantage by helping, right? Which is just discussing. But then the druid or cleric character will be making those rolls themselves.
Yeah. Do you have that player in the party who took those skills for RP reasons, but they're terrible at them?
All of my characters.
Great. Give them a little bit of help. So for leveling order, just start out bard here to get the skills and then straight through fighter to 19. All right. So Shane, who is your DMPC?
My DMPC is in love with one of the other characters. He is just a simple lapdog who would follow him around regardless of where he went. It is an unrequited love, and it will likely never be requited. And that's okay, because, you know, like, it's the kind of true love that just makes you want to make sure that person is safe.
Yeah. Also, I'm the GM, and I don't want to roleplay that romance with this player, so...
So in my backstory, I declared it was unrequited. How about your DMPC?
My DMPC is that character that everyone wants to avoid playing when the GM says that this game is going to be one noble and the rest of their retinue.
You're the retinue?
Yeah, exactly. The retinue, where you're like, oh, great, the noble is going to make the decisions, and then like I will have no agency in this. So my DMPC is the life ward or the sycophantic servant of one of the other characters in the party. However, in order to be the best life ward or servant, they have basically decided to consider the entire party as the person that they are protecting, because of course, if in case they are ever killed in the line of duty, which is of course a noble, wonderful way to go, she wants to know that her ward will still be protected by the others by keeping everybody alive and happy and together like a great team. Rah, rah, rah.
It's always good to put like a warranty on your life ward.
They're insured. It's fine. It's scratches all over them.
Oh, boy. All right. Before we wrap up, let's take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters.
Yeah, your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
And thanks to some patrons, we are officially opening up our Discord to everybody. Previously, it was only used by our group to organize some of our own activities, but we are instead going to open up the TPT Discord so that any listener or patron is welcome to come in, discuss amongst yourselves and with us, you know, what's going on in our campaigns or how to use some of the different things that we've created on the show, or you know, discuss Character Creation Forge or yell at us for things that we got wrong, or whatever it might be. So check that out. There's a link in the show notes. I don't know what Discord links look like, but I assume a bunch of random strings of letters and numbers. So you'll have to click the link.
I'm very excited for actually writing messages. It feels a lot more like texting because I hate social media.
Perfect.
You can also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you do that, we'll read it on the air. Like this one. This is Top Notch RPG Podcast by Lawyer Jeff. The hosts are brilliantly entertaining and all of the content is of the highest quality. The consistent release schedule and informative segments are a welcome sight in my podcast feed. If you want S-tier knowledge about storytelling and system mastery, then click subscribe and download. I think S-tier is good.
S-tier is good. I had to look up what this was originally from. Even though I have described things as S-tier, I didn't know what it came from.
Is it anime? I think it's anime.
I think it's just a video game culture thing in more broadly.
I've seen it on the Who Would Win subreddit a lot to describe like very highly ranked superheroes who would beat other superheroes.
I remember it in some of the racing games that were at Dave and Buster's and various arcades growing up. Like they would rank you like based on your performance in the game, and S was higher than A, and that didn't make any sense to me as an American who got an A on his grades as the best possible grade.
Oh, I would have loved to have gotten an S or an S plus. That would have been great.
Yeah.
And also now I wanted to go to Dave and Buster's.
Okay, great. Well, before we head to Dave and Buster's, what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're talking about sowing plot seeds.
And in the Character Creation Forge,
we're building the human cannonball.
Well, that's it for episode 193 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Venture Maidens is an actual play 5th edition podcast made by 4 longtime friends and lifetime gamers. We take our role-playing as seriously as we keep our bulges tasteful. So if you're looking for an epic high fantasy tale spun by a killer cast, give us a shot. We publish new episodes every other week and live stream our game recordings on Twitch. Now get on out there and download Venture Maidens wherever podcasts are free. Hope to see you in the community, and don't forget to venture away.